I'm Laura Ingle, Fox News Radio, and we are about to spend a few moments with, buckle up, my friends, Dave Mustaine. Dave Mustaine, of course, is the lead singer, guitarist, frontman, and founder of the thrash metal band Megadeth. I can't believe you're actually sitting here in the studio with me because I have been playing your music in my cars most of my life. So thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. It's an honor.
Peace Sells was one of my very favorites.
Thanks.
So I had a good time singing with that. So you're here because you've got a lot going on personally and also with the group Megadeth. Mm-hmm. You guys have just been nominated for a Grammy. Do I understand number 12? This is the 12th
time? I think it's 12 or 13. You know, I lost count. I don't think it's 12. I think it's more than that.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
So what does that feel like? You get these Grammy nods. I mean, you haven't won yet, but to be recognized on this level is... pretty amazing.
It is great. The recognition is great. I'd like to win, actually, but you know, the recognition is cool too.
And of course, this is the Grammy nominated for Dystopia.
Mm-hmm.
So you're nominated for the best metal performance for that title track. And I was reading some of the critics' reviews of your newest album, and it's being called one of the band's finest albums. And I have read that you have said of it that it has created more excitement for you than it has in a long time. So this sounds like, look, every album is special to every artist, but it sounds like this newest one released this year in 2016 is something truly above board for you.
Yeah, it is. You know, a lot of times artists, when they're on campaigns promoting their new records, they have to propel the publicity of the record by saying, this is my favorite. But there's some records we've had in the past that, you know, it's been really hard to go out and do that, you know, because having nudging is a nice way to say it from the record label or the management and stuff to make more popular songs, you know, radio oriented or video oriented when there really isn't a outlet for radio or video for us. It's hard.
Right. How has the music world changed for you? Because back when I was listening to you, and then as I mentioned to you off mic, I'm a former rock and roll DJ, and I used to be a DJ in Sacramento, and of course I always played your records, and I also played you on my show Metal Shop. So we had a lot of reasons to play you, but has it changed? I mean, how AOR radio, how different is it?
The reach obviously is still there with the internet, but using normal radio, it's gone away. I think a lot of that too is because of the advertising dollars. When you look at what the advertisers are willing to spend their money on, they look at the fan base for metal fans and they think it's, you know, like burgers and beer and stuff like that, where you get the car insurance and you know, all the other kind of, you know, expensive beers and jewelers and stuff like that. Those kind of ads in between songs are with the alternative style music. Mm-hmm. And that's where the higher advertising dollars come in from.
What about satellite radio? What about the metal shows that I hear on Sirius XM?
That's great too, but I think a lot of people haven't really embraced it as much as, you know, you get in your car, you turn the ignition on and there's the radio.
Right.
You know, I know that Sirius XM is trying to do these free things where you have the music free for a month, but you know, I find in the long run, not a lot of people that I know have it in their car. You know, and then at home, usually when you do that, you put it on as background music. It's not like when I would listen to music as a kid, where I would tune into the song and it's, you know, you're sitting there like eating popcorn, listening to a record and reading every note on the jacket and stuff like that. It's just not like that anymore.
Well, I bet there are some dinner parties where Megadeth is played in the background. That's got to be happening somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure somewhere.
All right. So in terms of the music that you love, I found a little thing on your Twitter. You are so active on Twitter and on Instagram and on Periscope, too. Before I get to what I found on your Twitter feed, what made you turn to social media? Some artists love it, some hate it, but you seem to be really, really active. You tweet back to your fans, and they seem to really love that.
Oh, I think it's a really great way to dispel rumors. You know, every once in a while, there'll be somebody who will say something intentionally to hurt you. But
we're always told to ignore that.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
we are.
It doesn't necessarily work, but, you know, the good thing is you can mute or block people, and if someone's going to say something smart-mouthed to me, you know, be prepared to get it back tenfold, you know, and I'm not like the girl from Ghostbusters where someone says terrible things about me that, you know, I would rally my fans to go after them because I don't need to rally them. They will go after them.
Right. You have a very, obviously a huge, loyal fan base. I love that one of your Twitter followers asked you about doing an AC/DC cover because AC/DC is one of your favorite old school bands, and you said, yeah, that's like a good idea. Mm-hmm. You probably made that guy's year.
Yeah.
By I'm saying sure that.
Actually, so, we did play one of their songs live when Bon had his 25th anniversary of his death. We were in Germany, and somebody had said, well, this is his 25th anniversary today. And it's like, well, none of us know a song. So we went in the dressing room and learned it in an hour. Really?
Which one?
Problem Child, which is pretty apropos.
Yeah, right. So I was looking at Dave's faves, some of your favorite music. And I just want to roll through some of them because maybe saying some of this will spark a memory that you can share because these are the bands and the music that helped shape you as an artist. So I was surprised. You know, I guess if you're a metal guy, you don't necessarily, it's not all metal in your background and especially growing up. I don't know if there was a lot of metal in your early childhood, but first album, David Bowie?
First album that I bought.
First album that you bought because the first album that you owned was Kiss.
I didn't really own it. It still belonged to somebody else. I took it. I was going to an ice skating rink and I had a giant down jacket on and I wanted that record, so I stuck it up the back of my jacket.
Ah, there you
go. I went back and made amends to the store and I said, look, you're not going to believe this, but I owe you $10 from like 20 years ago.
Really? You did that?
Yeah. I had to spiritually kind of clean my side of the street so that I would be free from all that stuff.
Okay. I love that story.
Yeah,
I love that story. That's a very good lesson for your fans to hear. Also, let's see, your favorite album of all time? Led Zeppelin.
Well, that's, it's hard to not have Led Zeppelin be a favorite band of just about anybody because it's just such an inspiring group. When you think about Jimmy as a guitar player, all the different sounds he had, when you listen to the guitar tracks soloed up, any one of those guitar tracks would sound not so great, but when you layer them together, it's just a fascinating process. And Jimmy and I were just at the Classic Rock Awards that I hosted in Japan a couple weeks ago. And he's just such a gentle little spirit. I saw him out on the street, and I said, hey, Jimmy, how you doing? He's going like, oh, I'm so jet-lagged. It's like, all right, I'll let you go. Okay, see you later.
See, why don't I see photos like that? I want to see that picture or hear that conversation.
Yeah.
And Jimmy on the streets of Japan having a little conversation. Mm. And I also loved that there was in this article, the album that makes me break the speed limit. Do you remember what you said to this interviewer?
Probably Motorhead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ace of Spades.
Yeah.
That makes all of us want to break this.
Yeah, truly. Yeah.
But that's incredible. You spent some time in LA. I say that because whenever I think of Motorhead, I think of Lemmy at the bar at the Rainbow. Because I lived in Hollywood for a while. And anytime you went to the Rainbow, there he was playing that video game.
Yep.
So music has changed and life has changed. But one thing that hasn't changed, I've noticed with you and with your band, is that you've always been mindful of politics. You know, even in the song that I mentioned that I love so much, Peace Sells, you know, talking about, you know, just everything in that song and who says I can't be the president of the United States of America.
Yeah, right.
And here we are
with
Donald Trump now as our president-elect. Where do you stand politically? You may not want to get into it, but has it been just a wild ride for you as well as others to watch what's happened this year?
I've always been of the mindset that if you don't vote, you've automatically voted for the winner. I think that our fans should be part of the democratic process. It's our right and it's a privilege to be an American citizen to do that. I don't tell people how to vote.
Right.
I think that somebody asked me last night how I voted, and it was somebody who knows me really well and was, you know, trying to get me to say, you know, who I voted for. And I just said I wrote my own name in. I didn't, but, just didn't want to go
any further.
It's
personal information.
Yeah.
You have every right to keep it to yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things where America's kind of lost sight of what the voting process is, too. You don't have to tell people. Mm-hmm. But I think that during this campaign, more so than anyone, because I've lived through, I think, this is our 10th president we've had since I've been alive. And I guess the percentages of families that have fought, broken up friendships and stuff is higher now for this campaign than any other one in the past.
I read that.
Yeah, which is sad because, you know, you should be able to vote for who you want without having to lose a friendship or a family member.
Right. Have you ever had a political discussion at like a holiday table that made you uncomfortable? I mean, I can't see you being uncomfortable, but anything that has made you clear the room and say, all right, we're not talking politics?
Well, I know when people have had enough.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't try and push my beliefs.
Is that when you go over and just plug in the guitar and just start doing a solo?
Write a song about you. No, I think that if you have an open mind, you can learn a lot from people, especially people that you don't like. You can learn a lot from your enemies.
And one of the things, you know, one of the things I like to ask people in these podcasts that we do, and again, we're speaking with Dave Mustaine of Megadeth. I always like to ask people, what is the one thing or two things that people might find surprising about you? I was telling you that I was interviewing Sebastian Bach, and he told me that he sang in the choir at church, and he went to an all-boys boarding school, and I didn't know that about him. And there's always something that you don't know about somebody that you might find surprising. What might that be for you?
That I'm nice.
You are nice. I attest to that.
You know,
he resembles that remark.
Thanks. I think that a lot of people have, you know, they'll catch something or they'll make their own judgment. Because, you know, this whole feud thing with Metallica has been going on for so long.
I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't want to bring it up. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah. We have to talk about it for a minute.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, us guys have settled it and we're friends. I played at their 30th anniversary and you know, we don't have a problem with one another anymore. I mean, we're not kissing cousins by any means, but, you know, we've buried the hatchet and we've moved on. And there's two great bands now.
Absolutely. And, of course, for those who may not know, you were in Metallica.
Founding member
of Metallica. Yeah. And how long did that last?
Till I punched Hetfield in the face and lost my job.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he kicked my dog. So, you know,
he kicked your dog? No, he didn't.
It was a puppy, yeah.
Really?
So, yeah. And I punched him, and I should never have done that because I really love him. I still do. And I think that it was a bad move on my part, but, you know, it happened. And I was in the band for a couple of years, and the music.
You were unceremoniously let go.
Yeah, well, I kind of deserved it. But, you know, I think that, you know, using alcoholism as a grounds for my dismissal is probably a bit hypocritical because we were all drinking hard. That's why they called us alcoholics.
I was going to say, I think that some of my friends from high school in Sacramento still have the alcoholica patches,
yeah.
Just for, you know.
Mm-hmm. And problem with me was when I would drink, you know, when they would drink, they would get, you know, lovey-dovey and, you know, chew up food and spit it in each other's mouth. For me, when I would,
wow.
You know, get drunk, I would want to fight people. So,
right.
You know, it's not a good mix.
Well, you've gone on to great success. And as we're talking about the Grammy-nominated Dystopia, you have a new member in the band. How new is that guitarist for you?
Kiko's pretty new. We met him about a year and a half ago when we were on the guitar hunt, and we had this management company who was approached by Iron Maiden and said, you know, they want you to do this big tour with them for a year, and you guys need to come off the road for a year. And we're there was no way we could really viably do that because, you know, two of the other guys in the band have no songwriting, they have no publishing, so they live paycheck to paycheck at the time, and management said, go find a job.
Right.
So they said, okay, don't expect to see me anymore, and they quit. And so we started looking for a new guy, and man, I interviewed so many people. And
how does a guitar, because we've got a lot of guitarists and a lot of metalheads watching the Facebook live feed, listening to this on the radio. How does one go about finding out mm-hmm. about an audition such as this?
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't public knowledge. You know, of course.
You really got to be in the know, I guess.
Yeah.
When you're at the Megadeth level, I guess that call goes out to somebody.
Well, the fact that they had quit had gone out because I found out about it the same way everyone else did. You know, they posted it and said, you know, we quit. And I thought, you know, that's pretty gutless and lacking character to quit and not say, you know, I'm quitting to me to make a public statement and an open letter. But, you know, people do what they do. That's something for them to answer to themselves on.
Right.
But when it came down to us doing the interview, you know, we would interview people and, you know, I would hear them and think, great, they sound great. And I would look at them and it's like, well, they don't have the image that, you know, we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
This guy that, you know, has giant, you know, bones through his ears and his nose and, you know, he's covered in tattoos that, you know, that's not quite the way that we look. And or, you know, they would look really great and they would play awful.
Right.
I remember one guy that I thought was really good. He had tattoos of flames all over his hands. Like, God, I'm so fast. My hands just burst into flames. And I was like, nah, I'll pass on that one. So we finally see this. I get this list and he, of course, is the last name on the list, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would have been the last name even if it was the first one because I stopped after him. But I called up my bass player and I said, hey, Junior, I think I'm going to hire this guy named Kiko. And he goes, oh, yeah, I remember Kiko. And I was like, you idiot, why didn't you tell me this 2 months ago before I did all these creepy, cruddy interviews with people?
But doesn't it make you appreciate it so much more?
It does. And there's a lot of great talented people out there that I looked at. And I have a pretty stout list of guitar players, you know, that are looking for work that I'd be willing to put up on our site just so that anybody who's looking for a guitar player would know. I probably won't do that, but... You know, they're out there. There are a lot of great guitar players.
And you do a lot of festivals, right? You have over the years. So who are the people that you love playing with? Maybe, you know, introduce us to some bands that we've never heard of or bands that we might find surprising that are your favorites.
A lot of the festivals overseas are different because the lineups, you know, we don't have concert buyers anymore like Bill Graham, who was a promoter, you know. We have people who will put together a concert with five of the same exact band. So you're double selling a ticket, you know, quadruply selling a ticket in some cases. And I found that the lineups overseas are so much different. You know, we did this one show. It was Oasis, REM, Faith No More, Sheryl Crow, Bo Diddley, and me. And I looked at Bo and I said, what are we doing here, brother? You know, and so that's one of the things I love about the foreign concerts, you know, the festivals, because you'll be playing with anybody. And I found that.
Who opened for who? Bo Diddley to you?
Bo played before, Sheryl played before us. And then the rest of those guys I don't really care about. So, they're all really talented. I like Faith No More the most out of all of them.
So would you rather do a festival or would you rather just have it be Megadeth?
Well, my little ego likes playing in front of as many people as I can. Mm-hmm. So anybody that tells you that they don't mind, you know, playing small venues, it's like, don't lie to me. You know, you'd rather
connect with the fans.
Yeah, play the Enormo Dome than Joe's Bar. You know, if you'd rather play in a bar than play in a stadium, you're retarded.
All right. Well, let's talk about beer because beer is fun. Mm-hmm. And I understand that you have your own beer. It's a Megadeth beer. How new is this beer? Tell me about it.
Well, in October 22nd, it was released. It's a Saison, which is French for season, and the Belgian monks would brew it during the winter months so that they could have it during the summer.
Okay.
So it's very refreshing, and it's called a Toulamon, and it's made by a company called Unibrew up in Quebec. Okay. And it's funny because everyone I've talked to does the same exact thing I did. It's spelled Unibroue, and I went Unibrow because it looks Unibrow, right? And it's like, no, it's Unibrew. And they'll go like, a tout le monde, and it's like, no, okay, look, I'm giving you a French lesson now because Unibrew and a tout le monde because the second T in two is silent.
Right.
So, you know, that's not a great way to get off to a start in an interview with the guy saying the first question and you've corrected him twice.
But, right. You notice I didn't say the name of the beer. I let you do it because I saw it.
Very clever. You're savvy. So it's been really good. We've been doing really well with it. It's funny. I remember Sammy Hagar saying that he made more money selling tequila than he ever did in Van Halen, which I thought, are you kidding? Van Halen's massive. They had to have made good money. So, and I get it because the food business is way different from the music business.
Congratulations on the Grammy nod.
Thanks.
I'm so glad to finally meet you personally for the first time because I have met you before. As I said off mic, and I'll tell you guys right now, I was a radio DJ and we had you in for a meet and greet a long, long time ago. Mm. And you were very gracious to our winners who got to come in and meet you. You ordered sushi. Nobody knew what to make of it, but we had a big sushi dinner. A bunch of sushi for our listeners back in 1990-something, and everybody loved it, and you guys were all really gracious, and you took photos and signed, and thank you then, thank you now for coming in. Congratulations, and maybe we'll see your music again featured on the Bill O'Reilly Show, because that was one thing I didn't get a chance to say, but you had tweeted to Bill that you bought all of his books. He made a nod to you on his show, putting up your new music.
A lot. So yeah, he did me really solid, yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So maybe we'll have a joint appearance with you and Bill O'Reilly someday. Who knows?
We'd love that.
We'll do it right here on the radio. So thank you for being here with us. And don't forget to follow Dave Mustaine on Twitter and Instagram at Dave Mustaine. That's with an E. And Periscope, too. You like to Periscope a lot.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so that's always fun to watch. So thanks for being here, man.
You're welcome.
Dave Mustaine from Megadeth. I'm Laura Ingle. This is Fox News Radio.